This podcast is brought to you by our patrons at patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Welcome to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the amazing universe of the Elder Scrolls. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. This is your host, Tom, or Robots. I'm here with Lotus. Lotus, it's Diablo Day.
It is Diablo Day.
Well, it's Diablo. We had a discussion
before the show. Yeah, it's mildly early Diablo Day.
It's not regular edition Diablo Day. It's super douche edition. What did we land it on?
Yeah.
If you, I'm including myself in this, so don't take offense if you pre-ordered and got into like the bonus editions, like the extra.
Yeah, this but there's is three the tiers. Early access.
Right,
yeah.
There's three tiers. And Lotus at first was like, it's the super douche edition, which means like the highest tier. And I was like,
right.
No, it's basically anything above regular edition. And so he said, so it's like a mid douche. And I was like, that's a really gross image.
Yeah, we determined that was a terrible, terrible way of describing any of what we're talking about.
But that is the edition I bought, so I guess I'm a mid-douche. So welcome, I'm mid-douche, your host. we got to knock this episode out so we can go back and play more Diablo. But this is about Elder Scrolls. And Lotus and I have taken you on a tour of all the different locations in Tamriel, all over the place, all the different sections. And we've been brainstorming where to go next on our adventures. So we thought, you know what? There's other places that were kind of mentioned and were not the main focuses of these locations that we've already been to. Let's delve into some other deeper locations. What do you think about that?
That's great. That pun really makes me happy and not sad.
Was it a little too dark for you? Did I reach too far?
This isn't better. But yeah, this was actually sort of kind of inspired by the Patreon chat where we were some off the cuff ones were pretty good. People didn't necessarily just pick the standard things. And we got into some weird ones, which I really liked. Blackreach being like a really interesting one that we should probably dive into here.
Hey, that's a great idea.
Yeah, maybe we should tackle Blackreach.
Maybe we should do that this episode.
All right. Yeah. I mean, it's not like we planned this in advance and got the information and looked it up on the UESP to reference and everything.
Planned everything out already.
Yeah. No,
and
not at all.
Just to respond
it's all from the cuff.
Yeah. To respond in the comments. Sincere, we already did elsewhere. We've done all the regular zones. So now we're moving on to some other stuff. So we're starting with Blackreach. Everybody loves Blackreach. Everybody's played Skyrim. Everybody's found themselves accidentally down underneath the ground and gone, oh my God, this place is huge. What is going on down here?
Yeah.
Right?
I actually don't even think that's a hyperbole. I think literally everybody has played Skyrim.
At this point, everybody on the planet has played Skyrim. Maybe on their fridges, but you know.
However you got to do it.
Yeah, so let's talk about Blackreach, because Blackreach shows up not only in Skyrim, but it also shows up in ESO, because there are Skyrim zones in ESO, but the section of Skyrim that you are in is a section of Skyrim where we didn't initially think or know about Blackreach being underneath, but it turns out that the caves and the caverns of Blackreach are actually way more like further spanning than just the section we get to explore in the game Skyrim. So
it expands out substantially farther. The area that you know, terrible dad jokes aside on delves and stuff like that, it was a very big cavern in Skyrim, but a lot of the kind of outcroppings and stuff like that had collapsed over the years because it's in the fourth era. So like a lot of the stuff seemed sealed off. You weren't even sure where it went. And all the way back with ESO in the second era, you actually get to explore all this cavernous network that you have a lot more access to. And we'll get into the fact that it's actually honestly a lot more populated because it's still sort of an active mining thing.
So there's different eras of time and we have to go way back to the beginning, to the Merithic, to early first era to delve into, oh, here we go again.
Perfect.
The
not going to get
the oldest stuff that we know about this location. So first of all, it is a very natural formed cavern. This is not something that was excavated. You can't say, oh, it was excavated by the Dwemer because the Dwemer have the lifts that go down there. No, it was existing, as far as we know, before they got there. And they had a name for it. They call it Falzardum Din, which was Blackest Kingdom Reaches. And that's what they called Blackreach. And the Dwemer liked to live underground, so it makes sense that they would have delved into sections of Skyrim and eventually discovered this gigantic cavern underneath.
Yeah, and I mean, you can have a natural formation and a cave on its own and then just kind of work with what that is. I mean, we kind of, in real life, do that all the time with stuff. So the fact that there's just this natural cave network underground and then it's expanded out on makes total sense anyways.
Right. But the Dwemer weren't the first ones to find this location and use it. It turns out that if we go far enough back in time, we get to the end of the Merithic era, the beginning of the First Age, the First Era. It turns out vampires were the first ones to find and claim the caverns and to use them as a home, which makes sense because they're vampires and a gigantic lair underground would be super useful for creatures that don't want to go out in the sunlight.
Right. You basically have permanent protection from the sun at that point.
Right, right. Now, all of this connects through to a lot of... The reason we know a lot of this is because of the Dark Heart of Skyrim storyline from the Greymoor chapter of ESO. And in that chapter, we discover something called the Dark Heart. And the Dark Heart is a... It's like a sphere that emits this void energy.
Yes, and we've touched on how nebulous void energy kind of is and like access to the void as a thing. So that gets a little strange. We won't go too much into that.
Well, we talked about this a bit on the Nymira episode. And
yes, I was going to say we've discussed another episode before with what we can. It's the thing with the void is it's very speculative.
Right. And this object, we know that this has some sort of association with Nymira, maybe some sort of association with Lorcan. It's a very powerful item that was found in Blackreach as far back as maybe the first or second century of the First Age. And it was discovered and kind of fought over. The vampires wanted to use it, and there's this whole thing about all of that stuff, and it plays into the storyline, so we're not going to go into that too much. But the vampires were there originally, and then eventually the Dwemer show up because of the events of the First Era, the First Age, and they spread across the land from Morrowind to Skyrim to some other locations, and they delve into the ground. And they realize that there's all these caverns down here. And so they create this elevator network that you find in Skyrim and in ESO. Those Dwemer designed elevators were built around this period of time.
Yeah. So they provide a pretty cool entranceway to not just the same spot, but like there's several different entrances around there, which actually for Skyrim specifically was very unique. Because you would go in there and the cave network was so big, and then you could like leave and it's like, oh, what is this? And you pop out at an entirely different area of the map above ground.
Right. Right.
Which was pretty cool. I mean, it makes a little more sense in an MMO because you have these giant sprawling environments. So like, okay, yeah, this is just an entry point, blah, 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 blah. But it was very, very unique to just that area in Skyrim itself, like the game Skyrim, not the region Skyrim.
Right, right. And so one of the reasons why the Dwemer were so interested in this location is that inside Blackreach, they found Aetherium. And this is an arcane mineral that became very valuable for them to mine and collect. And this became the location where they found most of it. And Aetherium shows up in other quest lines in the games. It becomes an item that is kind of looked for and highly cherished.
Yep.
So do you want to go into more Aetherium stuff? I don't know that I want to delve too much into that. That feels like its own episode, too.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think there's really that much we need to get into specifically on Aetherium. There's a forge named after it.
Yeah, yeah. I
mean, like, I don't know how much we really need to get just because it's down here. I don't know. It doesn't seem there's some other cool stuff that we'll get into that's unique to this as well.
Right.
Which it's like, I don't know. It doesn't strike me as anything more than the casual flora and fauna that we usually deal with. It's just like, checkbox, there is Ethereum.
Yeah, there was also the Ethereum wars where there's a whole struggle.
The whole war is over getting a hold of it. And
Right. So this stuff happens, the first age stuff happens, which again is very speculative. It's only, we only find it in certain documents and those kinds of things. And then there's the connection with the Dwemer and the Snow Elves. And this became one of the locations where they would have taken the Snow Elves and eventually turned them into Falmer, which is one of the reasons why you find Falmer down here. But it makes sense that this is an underground location in Skyrim. There's going to be Falmer down here. Right. So there's that part of it as well. Now, the other thing about the whole vampires and the Dark Heart thing is there's a character, and I think this character is particularly interesting. In, sometime during the First Era, Rada Al-Saran would come across the Dark Heart beneath the Reach. And this is specifically the part of Blackreach that's underneath the Reach. And Rada Al-Saran is a really interesting character because you actually deal with him in ESO, which happens in the Second Age, which is hundreds of years later. And he is a Red Guard who was born in Yakuta, made his way over to the continent, and eventually became a vampire, which is the reason why he's still around in the Second Age.
Exactly. Otherwise, he would have long been dead.
Yeah, so this is actually really cool because he's one of very few characters that we know came from Yakuta, actually lived in Yakuta, which is really cool. There's some, we don't get that very much.
I know, it's a little different when you hear, like, we're descendants of people who came from Yakuta, but there isn't, like, I saw Yakuta. This is one of the few people who literally is a living person who was from another continent that people now only kind of talk about in stories before it sunk. So it's a very unique character perspective to have with Rada Al-Saran. So
we've had some questions, people are saying things like, are you guys going to do episodes about these other places like Yakuta or wherever? And the truth of the matter is that all the information we have about Atmora, Yakuta, any of these other locations. Akavir.
There's a lot of them.
But there's not that much info.
Important to the series. But again, kind of in regards to the whole concept of being like nebulous, like the void, there's a lot more references to them than there is direct information on them. So we had tossed around the idea maybe at some point we could condense all of what we know to just, hey, here are all the scraps of the stuff that we know about but don't know that much about.
So maybe we'll put that all into one episode
and probably just be one episode as opposed to kind of a Yakutan episode and have it be 5.5 minutes long,
right, to kind of consolidate all, because these things come up and we talk about what we know in individual episodes, but to kind of consolidate them all into one source
just
might
be
a good idea,
a reference one. But there's not as much as individual regions because the majority of what is discovered in the Elder Scrolls is what's on Tamriel. Tamriel tends to be the focus, and then you can even have this weird situation where it stretches out into Oblivion. Mm-hmm. But like the focus itself is the continent of Tamriel. So like it's a lot more of, here's the playground that you're in, as opposed to, you know, where their homelands are, if they're even still around in many cases, which isn't always even the case.
Yeah. So the last thing I want to say about Rada Al-Saran is he was Yakutan. He was known for his swordsmanship. He may have been a sword singer, and we just never get to see it.
Right.
And which is kind of cool also.
It is. And, well, I guess if you play through the Greymoor storyline, the end boss fight where you're dealing with him, and actually you kind of encounter him several different times.
Right.
He's definitely a pretty powerful vampire.
Yeah, he's all vampire-y.
Like a thrall. It's definitely up there as one of the vampire lords type of deal.
Yeah.
So the fact that, you know, he might possess sword singing really seems like pretty within the sphere of potential for someone like that.
Yeah, he was clearly a very powerful individual before he even became a vampire, and it's kind of just neat to know that, like, maybe that was a thing that once he gained the vampire abilities, it's like he didn't need to use it anymore, but he was deadly with a sword. He came from a culture that had sword singing. P- put two and two together, maybe he was one who actually wielded that ability earlier on before we actually get to interact with him. So
yeah,
that's the first era. The second era is mostly the events of ESO, the Greymoor section, and the Grey Host. He's one of the vampires that leads the Grey Host, and their connection to the Dark Heart and the Void and all of that stuff, and them trying to use it in order to do evil, nefarious stuff, and then you stopping them. That's most of what happens in Blackreach in the second era.
Yeah, condensed version, you know, vampire plague spreading over the planet. Big into the vampire plagues are just blotting out the stun and, you know, now going topside to do what they want.
Right. Now, part of the reason why Blackreach is showcased in this section of the story is because the sections of Blackreach were rediscovered at this point. They kind of fell away from common understanding that they were there. The Nords didn't really know much about Blackreach, and it wasn't a thing that most people knew about. The vampires probably still did, but the common people didn't know that they were living on top of this gigantic cavern. And there was a rediscovery of the location, and then very quickly, like you mentioned earlier, they started mining things. So in ESO, right, when you go visit Blackreach, there's a town down there. There's people working and doing their daily stuff down in Blackreach.
Yeah, Dusktown is actually really cool because it's a straight up mining settlement down there, and they're going off into these, you know, grottos and caves and all these things to mine out valuable whatevers. And they basically, as opposed to needing to go up and down constantly, it's just like, well, we've got enough space, let's just set up shop down here, and we can just live down here for chunks of time. So it's like, all right, well, there you go, making the most of the situation, I suppose.
Right.
That seems like that would screw with your circadian rhythm pretty hard, but you know.
Well, miners in general spend a lot of time underground.
That's valid.
Not out in sunlight.
Maybe you don't have circadian rhythms in Riel.
Maybe they don't.
They sleep whenever it's handy.
Yeah, but there's also a gigantic vampire castle.
There is, well, it's sort of a couple. I mean, there's one that's just a straight up vampire castle.
There's one humongous castle. I mean, there's multiple locations, but there's one gigantic castle. Yeah.
And then also Night Hollow Keep is like, you know, that one's, I don't know, a more modest vampire castle.
Yeah, there you go. It's where the not as well to do vampires live. One's for the vampire king, the rest is for the vampire lords. That's it. So the events of ESO happened during this time, which we're not going to dig into too much. Yeah. And then have a big gap in time, because none of the other games mention Blackreach. It doesn't really come up until Skyrim, which is chronologically the first time it comes up at all from like a meta perspective.
Right.
The writers in the series didn't come up with the concept of Blackreach being underneath Skyrim until the game Skyrim was made, and they were like, hey, let's add this gigantic cavern under here and make it look awesome.
Like when I was playing through Arena, I did not go to Blackreach. It wasn't a thing.
Right.
I mean, it was supposed to be there or whatever, but at the time it wasn't.
It wasn't, and you know, any mention of it didn't describe it in any real detail. So we get the detail in The Elder Scrolls Skyrim, and that's the one most people are familiar with, this whole place where there's, you know, the dwarven lifts that go up and down, the creatures that live down there, the glowing mushrooms, which is the same that way that the Elder Scrolls Online one looks. The fact that there's a dragon down there.
Yes, there's a dragon you can summon down there, which is an interesting little Easter egg. It's a pretty cool thing when you first stumble into it. It's kind of hard to explain, but the first time you find Blackreach in Skyrim, it's so unique even compared to everything else in the game. Just because it's weird.
it breaks the design of the rest of the game. The rest of the game, you can spend hours running around the game, going from snowy mountains to forests and these kinds of things. And then even when you go down into a cave, the caves are designed in a very specific way. There are certain tile sets they're using in order to move around in the caves and, you know, search, right. Go through your quest lines and things like that. But then you go into Blackreach and it is a completely different design aesthetic. You are not stuck with these small little tunnels anymore. It opens up really large. There are the glowing mushrooms everywhere.
Yeah, the bioluminescent like fungus everywhere, and it's hyper overgrown, gives a very, very Morrowind feel.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an underground feel, but you start getting these like larger than life mushrooms, which honestly, we had mentioned before that the kind of the alien aesthetic that drew a lot of people into Morrowind, myself included. Mm-hmm. But then like the next couple of games were much more grounded in like, okay, this isn't quite so weird. This is much more relatable. Here's medieval Europe with Cyrodiil. Right. Here's, you know, Iceland, Greenland, all this influence type of thing. Mm-hmm. And then you go into Blackreach and they're like, ah, just kidding. It's still weird here too.
We got
like,
weird. Oh. Don't worry. They're still weird. Yeah,
it's like, there's weird, but you got to look for it.
You got to dig for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to respond to the comment, the dragon's name is Volthuryal.
Oh, perfect. Yeah.
Volthuryol. Volthuryol. So you're very close. Revan in chat put Volthuryol with two O's, but you're very close on the spelling. So that's Blackreach in the fourth era. And I don't know. There's not a whole lot more to say about that section. I mean, what I find interesting about Blackreach in the fourth era is that it again has disappeared from common knowledge.
Right. It was even brought up in chat that it's like it's kind of like most common folk don't know. Like, it's not just like, hey, you want to go to Blackreach for the weekend? Like, it's like,
right?
No,
right.
It's like, is it there? Like, it's a thing that could exist, but it's kind of lost to legend for the most part, more than, you know, I'm going to pick up a mining contract over in Blackreach. That's not really, it's like, it's degraded over time, which kind of shows through because it looks much more run down in the fourth era than it does back in the second era.
Right. And I've got some theories on that, but you know what we're going to do? We're going to go thank our patrons because we got to take a mid break, and then we're going to come back. We're talk about the flora and the fauna because that's sometimes what we can do with this stuff. And then I've got a theory as to why it might keep disappearing out of common knowledge, at least with the Nords. So we'll explain that when we get back. Don't go anywhere.
It's that time. Holiday shopping is here, and I've got something to help you out. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds you won't see anywhere else. And that's legit. How many different stores can you find exactly the same products and you just are shopping for whoever has the best deal? No. This is a place that has high quality, unique, often handmade or made in the US products by independent artists and small businesses that truly create one of a kind gifts for all sorts of different seasons. And it's the holiday season. Well, get this. I found one that I thought was super cool. Now, my wife loves puzzles. She loves mysteries. She loves escape rooms. They have murder mystery jigsaw puzzles where you use the puzzle to solve the mystery. There's a few of these, and I think I might pick up the clairvoyant convention one. I think she'll love it. And that's just one example. They've got gifts for moms and teens, book lovers, history buffs, diehard football fans, foodies, mixologists, gardeners. There's something here for everybody on your gift list. And they give back $1 to a nonprofit partner of your choice with every purchase. They've donated more than $3.1 million to date. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/scrollslore. That's uncommongoods.com/scrollslore for 15% off. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
This is Hamish Morak, Dragonborn, and you are educating yourself to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
All right, here we are in the middle of the show. This is where we get to thank our patrons, including our newest patron, Christopher D. Thank you for signing up. I hope you are enjoying ad-free episodes and all the other things that you get on the Patreon. And we have to shout out our Daedric Princes, our Tier 5 Daedric Princes, Jacob K., Kira C., and Noodle Al Dente. Thank you for supporting the show. And to all 122 of our current patrons, we couldn't do this without you. We really appreciate it. Thank you for your support. If you are curious about why all of these people are signing up, on the Patreon? Well, it's because Lotus is so good looking and they just want to keep giving him money. But it also might be because
that's weird. I don't want to say you all have poor taste, but questionable.
But it might also be because they want ad-free episodes, or they want to join us on Patreon chats, or they want the cool t-shirts, or all the other things that you can get on the Patreon.
Yeah, like actual real incentives.
So patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast. It's easy to get to. You can just Google it too if you need to, if you want to go check that out. And I'm so sorry that I couldn't join you all last week. I was stomach issues and things and was not feeling very well, but I'm glad that you all got together and had a really fun time chatting. Hi to all the patrons. I hope I see you again at the end of this month. But we have some new reviews that have showed up in the meantime, including this one from, get this, Lotus, Alduin 65.
Sweet.
Alduin wrote,
we got a time traveling dragon.
Yeah.
Review
from the United States.
Oh, that's weird. I never knew he lived here.
Yeah. So Alduin writes, truly wonderful. The fervor and passion these folks talk about the ES universe with is just fantastic. The depth of knowledge that they have is so refreshing for anyone who loves the series but can't make heads or tails of the impossibly dense source material. I've played since the days of Morrowind, and these folks still surprise me with something new each episode. As a social studies teacher, oh, that's cool. I find their incorporation of history, geography, culture, and even economics incredibly satisfying. If you enjoy the Elder Scrolls series, you need to give this channel a listen. Truly wonderful. P.S. If you like D&D or even DM, this channel is great to listen to for making up your own campaign settings and better understanding pre-existing ones. That's a fun idea. I know a number of people who do.
A very flattering review.
Yeah, a number of people do D&D in like an Elder Scrolls setting, and like, absolutely, the more you know about the lore, the more you can use it to write your own campaign stuff. So that sounds awesome.
Absolutely. I was gonna say it's a couple of years ago now, but I actually was involved with Rich Lambert, the creative director from Elder Scrolls Online, Hyperpixie, who used to be one of the co-hosts on Tales of Tamriel, and Demios Thea, who is a stream team member for the Elder Scrolls Online. And it was hosted by the UK team with Ophelia. Mm-hmm. She did a one-off charity campaign where there was only one person who knew anything about D&D, which was Hyperpixie. And then Ophelia specifically chose three of us. She was like, well, you do enough forward facing stuff and do stuff on the fly, you can probably, we're just going to have three people who don't know what the hell they're doing and one person who understands D&D. And I'm going to put, basically she made us a D&D Elder Scrolls session for charity. And it was a ton of fun. D&D is not super my thing, but I had a lot of fun with it. I was a Dwemer Centurion as a character.
Wow. And
I ruined the campaign.
Perfect.
Yep.
That's great. That's because you shouldn't have been there. That's why you ruined it.
Exactly. It's very sociable for a Dwemer Centurion. But yeah, no, I totally get the crossover there. It makes total sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we have another one. This one comes from Dead Storm Pirate. I hope it's a dead storm and not the pirate. Is dead describing
pirate
or storm?
Unless it's from the Dungeon Shipwright's Regret. ESO. Mm,
there you go.
Dead pirates in a storm.
Yeah, yeah. So this also from the US. They write, my go-to podcast channel. I love this podcast. Been into the Elder Scrolls since Morrowind, and the lore has always gripped me, and your podcast covers everything that I want to know about the amazing world. Everyone associated with Robots Radio Group makes the best podcast that makes my day at work go by quickly. So that's a shout out to all the other hosts on the network and all their shows.
That's just a generalized shout out to everybody. So
yeah, that's awesome.
And I can concur.
That's awesome. Well, thank you everybody for your support. If you would like to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, then we'll read it out on a future episode. You can also rate the show on Spotify, tell your friends about it, send money to the Patreon because Lotus has a beautiful face, you know, any of that stuff. So thanks for being here. All right, let's move on with the rest of the show. Here we go.
That segue.
You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, dear child of Sithis. That is why the Night Mother loves you.
All right, we're back. We need to talk about the flora and the fauna.
Yeah.
It's
weird.
There's weird stuff. There's the glowy mushrooms. Nether root is a very important material that you can find in sections of Blackreach. Mm-hmm. It's an alchemical component used in the creation of Harrow Storms, which is the big storyline in ESO, the Second Age stuff.
Yep. Toxic in the background. I have one of the summoning vessels on the shelf behind me, but it's way too small and up in frame, so,
so you can't see it. But yeah, if you're curious about that stuff, it has to do with the vampires trying to take over and poisoning everybody with evil magic. So
yeah,
that's basically it, right?
That's a good condensed version of it. Yeah,
yeah. There's a bunch of mushrooms, but that also includes toxic fungi.
Yes.
Man, that sounds like a contradiction. That guy's a really fun guy, but he sure is toxic.
He is sure toxic. Womp, womp.
Yeah. So anyway, some of the speculation about the toxic fungi is that this is some of the, actually what was used to blind and,
right,
you know, decrepify the snow elves.
Yes, and kind of form the Falmer.
Yeah.
It seems like this is probably where some of that stuff came from.
So that came from here too. We also have a number of interesting animals. Now this lotus has always struck me as a little bit weird. Not only do we have like frostbite spiders and charis or charis,
I always said chorus.
I
have no idea. I'm not sure. It's one of those things where you don't really know, like, did somebody say it in game, or was it always written, or did you just see the name above the character? Because honestly, I have no idea if I can, like, I can't tell if I ever remember them hearing them say it.
I'm sure it's one of those words that gets said on occasion, but not very often. So you probably remember having heard it, but then just forgot it pretty quickly.
Oh, Rub says it's officially pronounced once in the game and he hates it. See, this is okay. So one pronunciation.
What was the pronunciation then? Charis. Yeah. Okay, so it's not a CH, it's a C sound.
No, I refuse.
Charis, because it looks like charis, right?
Yeah. But all right, so charis, okay.
So big bugs. Big bugs.
Yeah, yes. Chitin. Very unnerving, lots of poison in your face. The effect in Elder Scrolls V Skyrim is quite disorienting.
Yeah, and they're like the dogs of the Falmer. So most people are familiar with those from Skyrim. But you also end up with these other animals, which normally are not cave-dwelling animals. I mean, there are bears, gloomspore bears, which seem to just live in the caves. They don't just, like, hibernate in the caves and come back out and live in the woods.
Chilling there.
Right. So you got bears. You have wolves also, cench, and deer. And these are things that you see in ESO. You go exploring around in Blackreach, and there's just these animals just running around.
Yeah, and some of them are a little weird. Because they have like different aesthetics to them. Like the deer don't just always look like deer. Like they look physically like a deer, but it's like if a deer was going to a rave a lot of times.
Like, there's like a glowy thing going on with it, like their stripes.
It seems like a deer would that glow in the dark, the veil deer and stuff like that. They're very strange.
Right. So it's like these animals have adapted to living in the dark. And so they kind of light their own surroundings because they've got like this glow thing.
Right. They've evolved into being like one with being down there type of deal.
Yeah. So, okay. So here's a question. Does that have something to do with either the glowy mushrooms that they eat?
Right.
Or
did they pick up some of the bioluminescent junk?
Right. Or the ethereum.
That's also possible. Is like, could it be like radioactive or something like that?
Yeah, like maybe there's some sort of connection there to the kinds of things you find in Blackreach, which have this certain kind of bioluminescence to them, and then these creatures living down there long enough to start incorporating that into their biology or something.
Right.
I'm sure you can make a case for it. It's all fiction, right?
So this is going to be one of the quickest tangents I can give us, but I just found out about this today, which is really weird because it was before you messaged me what we were doing. So it's oddly specific. Did you know if you shine a black light on a platypus, it glows in the dark?
No. Platypuses are
apparently they're undercoat or something. It like reacts to black lights.
They're so weird on so many levels that
I'm
just not surprised at this point.
It's nature's whoops.
They're so weird.
All right. So that's it. That's the entire tangent. We're back on.
That's
back
wonderful.
On Elder Scrolls.
Platypuses is wrong. Maybe that's it. Wait, wasn't that like a James Bond movie? That was a James Bond movie, wasn't it? Then there's one other, the swamp jellies. There's a certain type of jelly that floats around down underground.
Which they're very similar to the netches. They're a similar type of thing. Where they're just kind of floating little blobs with
Yeah, right.
little tentacles, and there's just some very specific ones that kind of are here that aren't quite niches.
Yep.
When we were going through it too, and it was mentioned in chat earlier too, we had mentioned obviously the Nernroot thing. Did we want to discuss kind of the weird offshoot of Nernroot?
Well, Netherroot is the one that I mentioned.
So,
but yeah, Nernroot, okay. There is the offshoot of Nernroot. So that is a totally
right.
Thing.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah. Actually, that's, I think,
Crimson Nernroot. That's
yes,
where you're going.
Yes, there is Crimson Nernroot, which is like a weird offshoot that you can only find down in these caves. And they, I don't know, they still make that weird oops sound.
Yeah, but they're like red, where everything else down in the caves that glows is like this blue to green color. Oh, like an aqua kind of thing going on.
Yeah,
but they're red.
Crimson is a great way of describing it. It's not just red; it is like deep red.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a quest related to them. Obviously, there's actually several quests related to Nernroot, and this one was I guess you can't really spoil it type of deal, but the quest related to the Crimson Nernroot, just as something that I found very interesting, is very tied in to the normal Nernroot quest from the Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion, which I thought was really cool.
Oh, there's a connection. That's cool.
Yes, there is. If you find the journal of the guy down there, which I always suggest doing, it's a very cool throwback to that really annoying quest, because everybody used to get very annoyed, myself included, was, hey, can you get me 10 Nernroots? Hey, can you give me 20 Nernroots?
Sure.
And by the time it's like, hey, can you give me 90 Nernroots? I'm like, oh my God, dude, like, what is with the Nernroots?
Why?
Yes. Get off your Nernroot addiction. But yeah, that carries over. Let's just say enough time has passed where he might not still be around, but there is a tie-in, which is very cool.
Cool.
But yeah. So it's like, I don't know, the Crimson Nernroot thing, since it's so unique to the area, I figured it was also worth kind of bringing up.
Yeah, no, that's cool. It's definitely something you find in Skyrim, in the game Skyrim.
Yep.
And so here's another thing that I find particularly interesting. If you look at, and this isn't something that I notice myself when I play the games, but if you look at screenshots from different sections, and you can see this, for example, on the UESP at the bottom, there's a gallery. There's a bunch of different photos from different locations in different parts of Blackreach.
Mm-hmm.
The color of the glow is different in different
yes.
parts of the caverns.
Absolutely.
Some of the caverns are more of like a bluish purple kind of glow, like some of the ones in ESO. Some of them have more of this like very light blue aquamarine kind of color.
Yep.
Some of them are a little bit greenish in the hues. And then the section near Greymoor Keep, the big castle we were talking about, is like it's so you have the blue glow of the jellies and the fungus and things like that around, but the actual like fog in the air,
it's very reddish gold brown.
It's reddish golden brown because of the lava and the magma in that specific section
right.
of the cave, which makes sense because of the glow of the red and orange from the lava.
Yeah, it illuminates it very differently.
Right, but the other sections don't have that. So some sections, it's almost like, and I don't know if you can attribute this to like color grading in the game. Like each different designers had different sections of the cave and they color graded them slightly differently. So when you loaded into one zone, it was a little bit different from the previous zone. Or if it was intentional, if it was a like this zone is actually a little bit darker. So the blue is a little bit
right.
of a deeper blue.
Well, some of the names of the man, this is getting a little meta. The regions within this region mm-hmm. Kind of almost imply that maybe that's the case. You've got like someplace Dark Moon Grotto is one, and then you have another one named the Lightless Hollow,
right.
And they have different like they each of those two specifically, just because they happen to have photos directly on the UESP, so it's a great easy reference for me to
right.
They have pretty unique color patterns, so like.
Yeah,
I now, wonder if
you
it
could
is a
describe
more intentional.
Yeah, you could say maybe these are just different screenshots from different people with different settings in their games. that could be the case. But
that, to a degree, is true.
I feel like seeing these.
It is different.
They are different.
Grotto, because again, I've gone through every single quest and zone and stuff like that that's in ESO, and it totally is. Some are much more like aquamarine type of thing in the darkness, and Dark Moon Grotto specifically, I mean, remember being very, very purpley,
like
it had
blue,
a lot of purple hues, yeah, in it, and in the pictures, that's very similar to what I remembered them being as. But I also, right, I think Lightless Hollow might have had more of the giant bioluminescent mushroom things everywhere, so maybe that,
right,
alters the color because there's more of something of that. Like we had mentioned the lava, okay, well that gives that twist, maybe based on what's there involved, you know, twists it to that color palette.
Yeah, even in Dark Moon Grotto, the fire on the little altar that you warp places on, whatever that's called, is has a blue tinge to it. It's a blue, yep, hue. So even the flames down here, which normally are regular flame colors,
sure,
are bluish. So yeah, there's definitely something interesting going on with the color grading and the way that all works, because not all flames. So well, for example, if you look at the mining settlement in Dusk Town, you still have the same kind of purplish bluish hue to the other things in the scene, but there's very much a real fire in the middle where,
right,
and fires in multiple places, like outside of homes and things, casting light on the wood.
Yeah, in the tavern and stuff like that.
Right, so you have the oranges of those other locations.
And some of the, like, the rock formations, there's a lot of geodes, like freakishly large geodes and stuff like that. And they reflect a lot of the light that they have in the caves. I actually find the art, I don't know, I guess art design of Elder Scrolls Online, where they do that, very cool, because they do, it has a lot of reflections off the stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, all of these things might actually contribute to why it's like, yeah, it's the same region, but it's got each, you know, when depending upon what's around, it can modify kind of like the feel of the area.
Right, right. All right, so here's my theory about why Blackreach keeps disappearing from common Nordic understanding, right, or experience. From the second era on, it's mostly Nords who inhabit Skyrim, and Blackreach is under Skyrim. For as far as we know, it doesn't extend out into any other zones. It might, but we don't know for sure.
Sure.
So it's mostly the Nords who don't know it's there. Other cultures aren't living there to even discuss it or care about it. So among the Nords, those who are, say, vampires from the Morithic era knew that it was there all along. They'd been living there all along. So they're not counted in that group. So you just have the Nords, right? The Dwemer knew it was there. The Dwemer disappeared. The Dwemer leave behind the only reliable way down into Blackreach, and that's through the elevators. We have lots of caves in Skyrim, and lots of Nords who lived in Skyrim would have known about the certain caves. Some of them were bandits who lived in the caves, but those caves either didn't delve deep enough or just didn't happen to reach certain parts of Blackreach to be connected to the main cavern system.
Sure.
You follow where I'm going? So yeah, the Nords themselves would have only been able to access Blackreach other than just having dug for no reason in specific sections and stumbled upon it, which didn't seem to have happened, through the Dwemer elevators. The Dwemer elevators in many locations were protected by Dwemer contraptions, guardians, those kinds of things. So the Nords in general probably would have stayed away from them or not known how to open them to begin with, because many of them are just closed off.
Sure. And so that totally makes sense. And especially with the size difference between what you can experience in ESO and then several hundred years later in Skyrim, you have natural formations of things getting closed off because of,
right, cave-ins,
whatever,
right,
and kind of adding to what you said, it's like, well, if something's super dangerous and you're safe in this zone, like you're a group of bandits, okay, you're using this to hide out, you can rob travelers, do whatever. But it's like, okay, well, why are you going to go down into the area where you could get aced by a pile of Dwemer spheres?
Right, or a Falmer. Or anything else scary under the ground.
Right.
You're probably just going to stay close to the surface, and you're
exactly
not going to explore too deep.
Stay where you're not going to get ambushed more than necessary. So right, that totally makes sense. And as time goes by, you know, parts of the cave might become inaccessible. Some might become more accessible if things fall away or whatever.
Right.
So you have like natural changes along with the fact that it's basically just a giant looming threat down there.
Yeah. But I also think that the fact that the Dwemer needed to build actual elevator shafts down to it.
Right.
We aren't told a specific depth. We don't know how deep these are under the ground.
Yeah.
But I would imagine that Blackreach as a system is much deeper than the shallow caves near the surface.
Right.
That it's so deep and so remote that it was the kind of place you could put the snow elves and then they could eventually change into the Falmer. It's
right.
It's not, this is not just a cave system. This is a cavern. And it could be a mile underground. It could be so far enough that it would be ridiculous for the Norse to even have delved into, even with just regular mining.
Right. And without getting overly on a different set of stories from the lore, kind of to back up your point there, because I do agree with you in the situation. They've got to be pretty far down, like. Overall, the grand scheme of things, like obviously there's some top parts and it's tiered and stuff like that, but the majority of it has to be pretty far down. One, just aesthetically, from being down there, you can look up and it's enormous to see the ceiling. So right. Just like they have literal castles built under there. So you got right. That degree of size. But beyond that, when the Falmer rebelled, and they had the war with the Dwemer at one point, it was raging underneath, and the Nords were just chilling upstairs drinking mead.
Yeah, they had no idea. It was so separated that there was no hint of it on the surface.
So that's what I mean. It's like that has to be not only a large area, there needs to be a decent amount of sound dampening to prevent right. That too.
Right.
So it's like there definitely has to be some distance between the surface and the living area of the caves.
Right. Right. So that's my theory. My theory is that remote.
I can totally see that.
Yeah. And Rob the Princess in chat says obvious perils to the Underdark and D&D. Yeah. Similar kind of concept. So that's my theory of it. And who's to say that we aren't going to discover other underground locations like this in other zones?
Sure.
You know, it totally makes sense that this might extend throughout other parts of Tamriel. Why would it be stuck only under Skyrim? I don't think there's a need for that to be the case.
I was going to say, with how big and expansive they are, I mean, it could stretch. I actually think it might have been mentioned in chat that it could, maybe it extends all the way down to Cyrodiil. Like,
yeah.
You don't really know, because a lot of times it's like you'll get these extra things. It's like, yeah, there's a lot of alien ruins in some areas, but then you'll see one or two pop up somewhere else. Same thing with Dwemer ruins. It's like these things aren't totally localized all the time to just like, yep, it's here and nowhere else.
Like these arbitrary boundaries. Like, is the edge of where that's something that we're learning more and more about in our own. Like, I fell down these holes where I just like find YouTube channels about things and I'm like, oh, this is interesting. There's a lot of things that we've discovered the last 20, 30 years from ancient civilizations in like the Middle East and the expanse of them. So for example, like we often think about the ancient Greeks as having been mostly living in like the Greek area, right? Like where modern day Greece is and the islands and those sections, like the Aegean section of the world. But it turns out that there are settlements of Greek culture all the way through to almost India, and they got swallowed up into the other cultures, and there's good reason why that happened before even the time of Alexander and the conquest and all that.
Sure.
So like these kinds of boundaries, this idea of thinking like this group of people was right here and this group of people is right here, like reality is more messy than that. People travel. People move around. They don't think, oh, well, that's their other people are in this area, so I'm just going to stop traveling east for a little while. Like, it's not how it works.
It's weird that things are like all different weird shades of gray rather than just very, very binary black and white on everything.
It's funny how that works.
It's weird.
It's like our brains want things to be black and white, but when you actually look at it, everything's always more nuanced. But life is
very much not that. Yes.
Yeah. It's weird. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we need to accept that things are gray more.
Cool. I'm off the show.
All right. That's going to do it. The show's done. This was the last episode of the show. Thank you for being here.
That's it.
Oh, man. All right, Lotus. What else do you have going on so we can head out?
Wow.
You set that one up.
I did. That was such a softball pitch over the plate. and I didn't see it coming, which I think might have been why it's even more offensive.
Oh, man. Oh, no.
Wow.
Black and white reach. Gray reach.
Wow.
So you got Tales of Tamriel.
We got Tales of Tamriel. We just had the last episode came out. We'll be recording again over the weekend, all you know, barring any catastrophes or whatever. You know, if you are an Elder Scrolls Online player, very soon Necrom will be dropping on PC. Got a little longer for us console folks, but it's right around the corner. So it's gonna be rough if you like other games, like I don't know, it drops the same day as Diablo. So hope you didn't want to do anything productive that didn't involve video games.
So speaking of Diablo, can I share this, Lotus? You and I have been tossing around the idea, I'm not committing to this, I will think about it while I'm on vacation, of doing a Diablo lore cast.
It's certainly something interesting. So
do you think there's an audience for that? Chat, do you think there's an audience for that?
I think there might be. I don't know. It would definitely take a little more research type of thing just for me personally, because
me too. I played through a lot of the games in the series. I didn't really get into two, but
well, the story to them is really cool. Yes. And I think the lore is really cool. And for the most part, Diablo is another one of the series that I really, really love. But, you know, what with all the issues surrounding Blizzard as the company, I haven't been quite as tuned into it over the years. There's also way fewer games in the series and outside sources, the way something like Elder Scrolls or Fallout has, Lord of the Rings, whatever.
I wonder if it would make sense to do it as like a one-off series.
I was going to say maybe like a limited series.
I feel like we could do maybe a year of content, and then eventually it would be like, well, that's basically everything we know.
Right, the story is fascinating. I love the vibe to that game and the world of Sanctuary. Mm-hmm. It's really unsettling. Right, And it's just, yeah, I don't know. It's very cool. I love the series despite my issues with the company behind it type of thing. That's why I'm so in favor of the whole Microsoft acquisition, because I'm just like,
yeah,
that seems like that would just be good for their culture.
Oh God, Bobby Kotick.
Yeah, just straight in the trash.
He just totally doubled down this last week on issues. Those were all made up.
And yeah, he sounds like a real great dude.
Yeah, he sounds like he's doing everything that every politician that we know does, and just lies and lies and lies until it just somehow becomes reality. It's like there's a whole lot of proof that what you are saying is absolute garbage, buddy.
Right? They're a mess, and I've kind of stepped back a decent amount from that. But it's like, you know, talking to devs over there that I've had the pleasure of knowing and stuff like that.
The team seems awesome. And
well, yes. And I've heard nothing but good things from a lot of the people who work there about they're so passionate about the games and stuff like that. And I've been a longtime fan. I love AARPGs. Like, I think they're super fun. But Diablo is kind of the cream of the crop when it comes to that as well.
It's the OG. It's the OG.
Yeah, they are. They're like one of the OGs. And, I don't know. It would sort of be an excuse to maybe do a reason to dive in extra deep and get all the extra little tidbits out of the series that I might not really know outside the surface value of it, because some of the stuff is weird in that series, and it is super dark.
Super dark. We're tossing that idea around.
Yeah.
Who knows?
So it's maybe we'll do nothing confirmed, but
we'll see. We'll see. Maybe I can figure out some.
Maybe
more.
We can make something.
Maybe
work.
I can invent more time, an extra day out of the week.
I would love to have, like, if I could get 3 more hours a day, even.
You just don't sleep. You just stop sleeping as much.
Yeah, I bet that'd help me live longer.
Probably not.
Oh boy.
All right, well, we'll figure it out in the meantime.
So something that we've been at least mulling over, if we could ever make that work, we will see.
The chat seems pretty cool on the idea. They're like, sounds cool.
So
we'll see. We'll throw the idea around a little bit, and we'll see if we can make it work out. Just wanted to toss that out there.
But yeah, other than that, just the usual stuff. And actually, as it was asked in chat, I'm actually hoping to get some more of the storyline playthroughs coming up for my series of the dungeons, which require, you know, a group. And I've had a lot of people say that they liked actually getting to hear the story. So hopefully I can get some more of those done soon. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to just manage my time to actually get half the stuff that I want done.
Yeah.
Which is shockingly difficult.
Just quit your job.
Yeah. I was going to say, who needs work?
Yeah. Here's what we do. We'll pitch the idea for Diablo Lorecast and we'll see if we can get like a few hundred people to pay into it like a Kickstarter, and then you don't have to work.
They'll just
pay for it before it even is a thing, because,
you know,
that'll totally work.
That works for so many things.
It really does, and that's so weird.
I appreciate people wanting to help. I don't appreciate those companies not fulfilling their things to the people that helped them.
Yeah, that's a total bummer. Anyway, we're not here to discuss that. But thank you for joining me again, Lotus. You can find all my stuff.
Absolutely. It's another Lotus fun one. Thank you, everybody in chat as well.
Yeah, you can find all our stuff over at robotsradio.net. And we may or may not be back next week. It depends on how vacation goes and coming back in town goes and all that stuff. So we'll see you then. And until then, play a bunch of Diablo. I'm going to miss like 4 days of not being able to play Diablo. So I'm going to have to catch up. But we'll see you. I guess the ESO expansion will be back when I get back.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
I'm going to have a lot of games to play.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
rip.
Good luck to me. Bye, everybody. Thanks for being here.
See you later.
See you later. Bye. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to hear from you. You can reach me on Twitter at robots_radio or Lotus of Doom at Lotus of Doom. Also, you can join us on the Robots Radio Discord channel. You can easily just search Robots Radio Discord on Google or check the description underneath the podcast. Also, this podcast is recorded live every week on Thursday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on the Robots Radio channels on Twitch, YouTube, and on Facebook. So just search Robots Radio on any of those platforms. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you while we record the show, or before or after. Either way, just come hang out with us. And if you're looking for more information about my shows and the shows on the Robots Radio Network, go to robotsradio.net for all the information about all the shows on the network, including the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where I help both new and existing podcasters to grow their shows, build their audiences, and create the best podcast they possibly can. All of that at robotsradio.net. We'll see you next time.